So nice to have you back, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
And let's get started with the situation in the Middle East. How do you find the foreign policy of the United States in the Middle East? Do you understand what they're seeking for?
I lost my connection here. Oh, there I am. Sorry.
I do have. Yeah, everything's fine.
Well, I mean, it's really hard to fathom. I think it's like, you know, having a Halloween costume and having to choose a different one every year for 40 years, and you still have to come up with something different. So you think it's interesting or new or changed, but it isn't. There isn't anything new or different about what the U.S. has been doing in the Middle East way back since the post-war era, after they took over for the British, the Suez Canal and all this. They see the state, whatever it is, of Israel as a forward-positioned aircraft carrier, basically land-based aircraft carrier, bomb central control for them to have a foothold in a region that was incredibly important for the production of oil, especially moving into the 1970s and all that. So there's nothing that has been new. The only thing that like makes me think of trying to come up with a good Halloween costume is how crazy it seems to be that it continues this unabated growth of the propaganda war. Like, to see what happened in Washington with Netanyahu is like, he should like they're writing opinions about Putin going to Mongolia as if they're going to snatch him and bring him to the ICC, and you have this fascist, this warmongering killer, you know, mass murderer coming and getting a 3.5 minute standing ovation from both parties, of course, and then what, 56 different interruptions of standing ovation. So to see that an industry or a political, well, I don't know, spokesman's factory, I don't even know what to call it, that they could be so out of touch, so completely out of touch with what 90% of the world believes. And there isn't anyone outside, and even at home, it's fallen apart. The Democrats are risking losing this election, which they deserve to lose, by trying to recreate this concept of the pro-democracy party, right? This is the administration. They oversaw the destruction of all of these attempts at mini democracy on hundreds of college campuses across. It was one of the most inspiring things that people who have been like us in the anti-imperialist movement for our lives, to see this thing happening again. And you say, finally, starting with kids from 18 to 22, are waking up. And the current administration, of which Killer Cam is the second in command, I mean, it is her administration. They can't keep saying, well, you don't know, she's not Biden, this, that, you know. There is no change and no prospective change from Harris or Biden to Trump either. So it's not as if there's a real choice to be made, but this idea that you can just keep going in this direction without acknowledging basic math, I feel naive that I could be, you know, passing 60 and still feel shocked by, I can't believe they just said that. I can't believe that she came out of a meeting with Netanyahu and started to talk about how these kids need to be, you know, brought to heel. She might as well be Hillary Clinton. They're super predators. They need to be brought to heel with these, what they say on the subway and what they say at these protests and this, as if the genocide is not real and is not happening. And what you have to confront is this strange, bizarre amalgam of something that they try to call anti-Semitism or racist, anti-Jewish hatred, just because that's where the money is. That's what makes the news. And it has nothing to do with reality, with history, with anything. I mean, I'm part of this is, I think I said to you in a separate thing this morning, that it's depressing to wake up in the belly of the beast and being kind of annoyed by the news playing in the background. Don't ask me why we sleep with the TV on. That's a marriage thing, I guess. But you see this old pudgy white guy standing there. He is the executive director of the local WCVB or the local news, and he is giving his personal editorial about how now that these kids, it's called Alston Christmas. This is the part of Boston where all the students come back on September 1st and throw out all their old shit and they get new stuff. And so it's, you can get free stuff on the sidewalks because the students are coming back to town. So it's a huge student population and he wants to make sure that he is in the public eye. It's never on camera at all, right? This is the guy who sits behind the desk 99% of his time. And he comes on to make the announcement in his own editorial voice that we have to protect democracy and we have to, of course, protect free speech. But, and then the whole litany of, you know, history, you basically reminding these kids that they have to read history by ignoring all of the history that came up until October 7th. Hey, there's nothing that you're allowed to say. And it's astonishing that this is somehow a key to U.S. policy, or it has anything, that there is any connection at all between the people and the policy. And the policy is just trying to kick the can down the road, like it is on everything else, like it is on Iran, like it is with Ukraine, like it is with Venezuela, like it is with the economy. Just make it someone else's problem. If you can make it past November 5th, and then you can blame it on an incoming administration. It really is a sickness and a total collapse of the system, which has been functioning to the point of suppressing dissent for many, many, many decades anyway. But now to see it reach this crescendo is beyond belief. And I think that what is the policy? Just keep on arming. Keep the Americans have given the Israelis more weapons since October 7th than they have any time in their history. And this is there's zero believable I keep forgetting that phrase. It's plausible deniability. That it's not us, it's our people that we support. We have to support them for these very important reasons: democracy and, you know, history and this, all these highfalutin things. But it's so clearly untrue. This is an American war. The Americans are conducting a genocide in Palestine. And these college kids finally saw it and started to wake up. And now it's not even permitted to be part of the discussion in U.S. Presidential politics. It won't be. I mean, they're having this big debate, if you can call it that. You know, tomorrow night is going to be the first one. It's going to be an absolute calamity. You know, I mean, they're going to try to outmaneuver each other. on who can out-warmonger who. You're soft on China. You're soft on DPRK. You're soft on Iran. You're soft on Russia. And then to take that, especially from the Democrat side, to take that and expect that you're going to have the huge, massive turnout among your most loyal base, which is, the left-ish liberals and the black population, which will just not, why would it happen? And you'll see it. You'll see it tomorrow night. I predict that you'll see the debate where she's actually spitting on all of those people and all of the policies that they would prefer and kissing up to white voters, just like Carter did to break the bond with the South that had gone over to the Republicans starting in 1976. And that hasn't changed since then, and it's not going to change between now and November 5th.
In your opinion, we've heard that Joe Biden, when he was so young, he said that if there wasn't an Israel state in that region, we had to invent a new state called Israel. But do you think right now it doesn't seem that the situation in Israel, in Gaza, would benefit the United States? The question is why they're not capable of changing their policy in Israel, and why it wasn't possible the Biden administration to convince Netanyahu and his administration in order to achieve some sort of political settlement.
That's an interesting question, Nina. I think it does point to some sort of stratification. You know, that there are saying there are zealots within the State Department and the Biden administration is like trying to peel off the top layer of the SS. You know what I mean? It's amazing that there could be extremists within this cabal of murderers, you know, but it is true that there is a line of thought that doesn't care at all. I mean, they have absolutely zero thoughts against basically making, what did Reagan say about Vietnam? We could, pave it, put parking stripes on it, and be back in time for Christmas if we wanted to. And there's that level of insane expeditionary mania, really craziness, that is kind of the scum that floats to the top of this boiling gobbledygook that is the State Department. But there also is a really, really deep and absolutely difficult to dig up this, the imperial history. Yes, this, they would have to have invented Israel. Well, they've invented an Israel 2-3 dozen times in South Africa, in North Ireland, now in South Sudan, in South Korea, everywhere that they have stuck their bloody hands has been to create some sort of Hutu Tutsi, exaggerated civil war conundrum. The idea of what the imperialists did in Haiti, you know, making a stratification that's based on skin color, still lighter, you know, moving the lighter ones up, having a client bourgeoisie in, you know, every single country from the Texas border down to Tierra del Fuego, the whole continent of Pinochet's and, death squads and paramilitaries and all this stuff. It is who they are, and it is what they do. I think it's interesting to try to tackle it, because people will come back and say, well, how can you say that? I remember this in some of the comments. You never even said anything about why this could be Russia's fault. I said, well, and how dare you do this without, you know, Nima, you should have asked the, what are they, devil's advocate questions. You know what, all of, they've been banned from the Olympics. They've been lied about. There are these ridiculous sanctions that backfired. They have been blaming Russia or the Palestinians, cockroaches, as Edward Said said. Maybe we're growing up. We used to not exist. Then we got to be cockroaches, and maybe we'll be rats one day, right? That we have to watch to make sure that we tell the truth in their eyes, the way they see it, without mentioning them. And the absolutely non-stop breaking of all these rules of normalcy, of how human beings should treat one another. It's so basic and so long-standing. I think one of the things that is interesting is to the creation of this state, the idea of how they've gone about making the Israels, making the extra state, making the proxy warriors, you know, going back to the 60s and the 70s, at least, with the School of the Americas in Georgia, using the CIA issuing a training manual on torture. Like, this is what the people who are in power and want to stay in power want to do to make that work. It's the question itself is a little bit difficult. It's like, why don't they see that this isn't good for America? What is America? What do you mean? Who's America? Who are we talking about when we say the U.S.? Right? Look at Ukraine. They've given $180-200 billion, you know, 75% of it has never even got there. Goes straight into the coffers of Lockheed Martin, whoever, who is up there now, Raytheon, Northrop, Boeing, all the same criminals. And those are the people that hold the power, and they want to continue it. So the question then becomes, how do you not see, if you're in charge of this, or you're subservient to it, how do you not see that this isn't working? And it's not, you're not going to keep winning at this game. It's a really, really bad game. And you're trying to rig it by lying to everybody. You're trying to make it true by writing the history and pretending. But it's very clear that it's not working anymore. And how do you not see that? That, I think, is an interesting, nuanced version of that question. And I think that is striking, but they've gotten away with a lot worse for a lot longer. So expecting them to just give up on Israel is a non-starter. Of course, they start to do what they have always done with their puppets and with their proxies, is they start to dump you. But he said, you have to attack Iran with us, and you have to attack Lebanon, and you have to say, there are some people in the State Department, even Blinken, you know, or Biden himself, and said, like, whoa, hold on a minute. You know, we will lie and exaggerate the concept of what it means to defend oneself, right? But we're not going to join you in that. No way. There is no way we are doing what you want us to do. And I think, I may be wrong, I'm always wrong, but to say that they could pull them in by striking first, look at what happens after that. Iran is waiting. They don't have anything to gain. by starting, you know, by retaliating, reciprocating, or slightly escalating. What they did do was sign an unbelievable defense agreement. I don't know what they call it, to avoid Article 5 of NATO, you know, but they are now joined at the hip with Iran. They're going to get missiles back and forth. They're going to get air defense. They're going to get S-500s. They're going to get, what is the IL-76? Whatever. I don't need to know all the details. Lockheed Martin knows those, so they can price it out for you. But those are kind of just happening because that's how, you know, what are we going to do? Attack you when you think and when you're best prepared in the same way that you attack us? That's what stupid people do. Anyone who's watched boxing for more than like 6 seconds or, you know, any form of martial art, that's not what you do. And I don't understand why they don't see that. They, of course, it's what it will mean. Maybe it is the question of why it doesn't change U.S. policy is that it delays it. And that's important in U.S. terms, because that's the only thing that the system really knows how to do is fake things until they work, which was great in the 50s, you know. But it hasn't worked very well since then. So they're waiting, and they get people to wait and play this we're better than the other guy game, right? We're nowhere near as evil as, you know, Mr. Evil. Oh, okay. What do you stand for? Well, not him. I know, but what are your policies? What do you want to do? Let me tell you, a lot better than he will do. Are we having a conversation? Is this, and this is really, you know, the big thing about what's happening in, if you take it out of the realm of the top 100 who are actually deciding things, and you come down into the group of people, which may be the top 20%, I guess, who think they really are involved in an election, you know, it's hilarious to see how vile they get with each other. The liberals and the Democrat, you know, like zombies who are running against Trump, and that's it. The world is going to end on November 6th if Trump gets elected. Absolutely. And if you deny that, then you're sick. You are a Nazi. You were probably raised by the Hitler Youth. And they go on and on. And you think of, but you're saying the other guy is crazy. And this is how you prove that, by having this bizarre discussion, which clearly is not a discussion. And this works its way into all the political, think of being on top of that. You don't really have anything to worry about, do you? I mean, that, like, you know, other people are absolutely stupid. So we'll just keep doing what we want, sending Netanyahu as much money as we can, and we'll see how much we can get out of it. I guess. Does that sound crazy? Or, like, when you're trying to analyze it, I feel like I'm not correctly analyzing the backdrop, because I can't really make sense out of it.
Yeah. In your opinion, right now, in the mind of the Biden administration, or even more importantly, in the mind of the Netanyahu administration, do they really feel that they're winning? That's why they're trying to continue this conflict, or they know that they're going to lose it at the end of the day?
Again, I think there is stratification. There's some who will fall back on, you know, Jay Gould's idea that I can hire half the working class to kill the other half. You know, so they're going to win no matter what, because if the human population is decimated, they're going to have own their own islands, and they, you know, but that's a little, even from my perspective, that's a little extreme. I think that there is a delusion, a really deep delusion. Like, look at Ukraine, for example, and you have some idiot with Wall Street Journal, with Forbes, with The Economist, all these standard neocon rags. You'll come out with, you know, after Kursk, the Russians seem to be slowing down in their approach to Pokrovsk. So what they're surrounding, where are you even getting this? It doesn't even look or sound like analysis. Wall Street Journal planted some sort of story about the guy with the yacht, the rich guy with a yacht, and they wound up in the Baltic, and that's when they went down and blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. It's just, who believes this kind of crap? And Lithuania is defending itself against the Russian potential invasion from Kaliningrad, which was one of the most isolated and exposed, like, just patches of land. But they've got to keep that delusion running strong. And if you do it well enough, you have, you know, what, 4-6 companies who own all of the media, and you can control as much of this discourse as you can. You have an educational system which seems to be absolutely focused on dumbing down the entire next generation. So there's no history, no geography, no, you know, even back with Mark Twain, he said Americans start wars so that the Americans can learn geography and learn to spell the names of foreign countries. That's the only way you could get Americans interested. And it's hard to predict what, if are they doing it because they really are convinced, or are they doing it because they know this is the only way to convince the rest of us? It's a very strange thing, especially talking like this internationally, but from a home base. Like, these are people that I can meet in a bar down the street on the personal level, and on a historic level, these are the people who dropped bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and never lost a night's sleep. That is what we're dealing with. And if you don't understand, or try to understand, what is very difficult to fathom, then you won't be able to respond. I remember back in, wow, it's almost the day. Yeah, we're at the 9th now, the 11th, September 11th, 23 years ago, when, you know, there were European tourists and Americans. And they both said, oh my God, what are they going to do next? And the Germans and French were thinking, oh my God, what are the Americans going to do after this? And the Americans were thinking, oh my God, what more viciousness are they capable of? These subhuman Arabs who, you know, have no, you know, just the usual, the absolute usual. And to see that bifurcation is very, well, it was then. Now it appears that Germans are going along with their own destruction. But whether or not you can say why do they think they're winning is, it's frustrating. I don't know how you could know what is actually going on behind closed doors. You do see, this is, look at the pandemic. You saw this, they milked that thing to have tens of billions of dollars in individual, you know, in Musk and his various billionaire friends moved their hoarding of wealth up by like a factor of 10 in that 5-6 years. And why would they care about the actual consequences? That's what it's really difficult to explain, when, because usually people are, when they're trying to predict the behavior of others, they are imposing some sort of like overlap. Like this person, probably they're not exactly like me, right? But physics is physics. If you push hard on this point, that will be where it will be softest. And if you lie to this person, they won't trust you. So you really should do. And none of that makes any sense when you're trying to tear apart what is actually going on in terms of the thought process of these, I don't want to say people, corporations, cabal, the gangs, you know, I don't know what to call them. Oh, I lost you.
Yeah, shifting the gear. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, now I can. You were.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do you think right now in Ukraine, right, it seems that Zelensky and his administration, they're talking, I don't know if it's Zelensky, but the people who are running the show in Ukraine, it seems that they want to continue this conflict with Russia. They're talking about 2029, 2028. Continuing this conflict. How do you see, do you think that would be possible for them with the level of ammunition, with the level of aid coming from the West, and with the policy, with the changes in the European Union right now in the United States? It seems that they're trying to keep this aid to send weapons, to send money to Ukraine. But we know at the end of the day that would not be possible to continue this conflict by to 2029, 2028. Do you think that they're thinking right now in the United States, getting back to the United States, do they really want this conflict as long as we have 2024 presidential election in the United States? And by the time that this election is over, we're going to have some sort of changes in Ukraine?
Yeah, I don't think that I kind of agree with some of the people that I've spoken with on different panels that saying that all they want is just to get beyond the election. But I think they represent the same people on the same side of history. And that doesn't change much when you have an election or when you have a new administration. What they have always wanted is to continue, not to win, to continue a conflict, to see that Russia is punished. And one of the things that I think is stunning, as you keep going back to that question about do they really mean it? What do they really think they're doing? They have been wrong at absolutely every turn. And it has done the opposite of what they wanted. Absolutely cemented forever, I believe, the Russian growth in terms of cooperation with the People's Republic of China, with Iran, and the determination against having this happen to them again. I mean, you think of that, what, you know, people saying, oh, you're talking about, you know, World War II, this is 60 years ago. Well, okay, it's a little more than 60 years ago, but just the other day was the anniversary of the beginning of the siege of Leningrad, one of the least acknowledged, there's a Russian writer was saying this just the other day, unacknowledged massive genocides in human history. And to expect that that's just a detail in dusty history books about World War II is just plain stupid. And as it turns out, the sanctions completely backfired. The Russians have taken the time to buttress their own system of production. They were wrong about how, you know, this is going to bring the Russian economy to its knees. They have no understanding of how the military and the society interact in Russia. The general staff goes back before the Soviet Union, and this has been going on for many generations, and they have defended their land successfully many times. And to think that they would do it differently is where I really kind of think it has to be naive, because I just, when you hear what the people say out loud, you know, what's his name, Jake, whoever, I mean, what difference does it make? Austin, Blinken, Blinken and Nod. Say that's not true. That doesn't make any sense. That's not how this is going to function. And if you don't believe that, there must be something behind it. And like I said, if it's a more based, but obviously more difficult conversation, because we don't really know. We're not making the decision. Talk about the 75, not the 25. Right? The real story is about the 75%. What about all that money that they're just raking in? What about all those Ukrainians who are dead, gone forever? We're on the third iteration of the Ukraine armed forces that have been destroyed. And now even people on the ground and people who are close to the conflict keep saying the Ukrainians attacked this, the Ukrainians. What does begin to happen this late in the conflict, and what happened just recently at Poltava, the 500 mercenaries were killed, all of them from NATO countries, not Ukrainians. And that is, the Russians said flat out, this is going to be regular. It's going to happen all the time now, because that's who's left. That's what you're fighting us with. It's a U.S. war against Russia. And if you don't understand that, then I guess you don't care. Now, nobody knows who those people are. I mean, the Russians know. They have their names and addresses and fingerprints and DNA samples, whatever. But it doesn't come out in the Western press. So-and-so died in the conflict in Ukraine, because they're trying desperately to hide the fact that they are in, you know, they were always in it up to their necks, but to hide the actual fact that Western soldiers are dying fighting against Russia. And because the blowback would be huge, not just from a military point of view, but from a political home front point of view. So they can never say that. And we're like, again, I hate sounding like I can't make up my mind or I don't know what I'm talking about, but you've got to look at then, say, 10 or 12 other historical examples. How did we leave Vietnam? How did we leave Afghanistan after re-upping under the great champion of democracy, Barack Obama? Right, the new thing. How did we leave Nicaragua? How did we leave, and which time did we leave the Dominican Republic? How did, you know, we leave Korea? And everything else has been going this same way. And you have a bunch of people who are dead or whose lives are decimated. And you have a very few people who are enormously enriched. And so will that continue? And I think that's a much bigger question. Will that continue? Is that going to be how this game ends? Because there isn't, until enough people realize, there won't be any sort of uprising. It's not like I'm trying to replicate Les Miserables or something, but to have the system grind to a halt. Because when we talk about what's wrong with the system, and we talk about how it works and how it doesn't work and it's not working this time, that we're also there, I believe we're missing a very important point. It's working just fine by how it was designed. It's doing exactly the damage it was designed to do. And this goes way to, there was George Jackson who said in 1970 already, he said fascism, people talk about approaching fascism, it's already here for us, for the black minority and for most of the third world. Fascism is already here. How do you hire and train death squads? How do you murder the entire intelligentsia of the black movement one by one through closed doors into their apartments in Chicago, wherever, however, drop bombs on their houses in Philadelphia? How do you do that? And saying it's already here is not saying the fight is over. It's saying people in different trenches or in different ways of fighting it need to look at that history and wake up and realize that they are late to the party. I want to be careful about that, because one of the things I find really important here is to see how many people have come out of that woodwork. It's like Smedley Butler on crack. There are all of these ex-CIA officers, high-level military inspectors, officers who have this, who were part of that for their whole lives, and taking probably sizable pensions from the jobs that they were doing with the military, with the U.S. CIA, et cetera, et cetera. I think I am glad that they are coming out and saying, you guys have no idea how hard this is. Unbelievably horrible. And when you think about it, like what all of us have chosen to do with our lives, to come out one day and oppose every bit of it, that must be really bad. So I think it's important that we encourage anyone who has, especially those with that inside information, with a really, really detailed knowledge of how military policy works, about how the CIA works, about how all these things work from the inside. Even when we were doing so from the outside in the anti-imperialist movement for, I don't know, whatever, how long, you know, 50, 60 years, long as I've been alive. But it's different to say it was true in 1970, so therefore there's nothing we can do about it. And to say, look at the progress, how history works, how these things have marched through. What about, stop talking about that, it was 60 years ago. Well, you know, it was 20 years ago in Beslan when terrorists came into this school and killed a whole bunch of Russian children based on the U.S. support of CIA manufactured proxies in the Chechnya fight. This has been, and then you go back to the coup in Kiev, you go to Pinochet, you go to any one of these things. It's really important to, it doesn't mean if you don't catch every step, then you don't know anything. But it does mean that you can't just throw things out and not know that there is a huge litany of historical facts that balance this equation. What is a settler colony? Israel is a settler colony. South Africa was a settler colony. The English presence in Ireland was a settler colony, and all of the United States is a settler colony. These are the refuse, the kind of the detritus of imperialist colonization, and it has certain systemic consequences that are really pretty obvious to people who are paying attention. And to then pretend that everything is disparate and unconnected, I think is, well, it's just exhausting, you know, because it's like, I don't know. I wouldn't sound like that again. It's like, wake up, go read something, and then let's talk later. Cause I don't, yeah, but what about, you know, the other day when like, oh my God, really? You've never read any history? I don't know. I don't want to sound like a jerk.
And just to wrap up this session, mm-hmm. Do you think that right now in the United States, the problem that we're facing toward all of this conflict, Ukraine, Taiwan, in the Middle East, it seems that we're getting to the level that the administration is totally ideological. They don't consider any sort of fact what's going on, what's really going on in Ukraine. Let's look at the facts, what's really happening right now. It doesn't seem that would be the case for them. The ideology is playing a very important role in this whole situation that we're witnessing right now in Ukraine, for example. And Do you think they're just losing their connection with the reality? That's why they're getting totally ideological?
I think, again, Nima, I hate parsing when I think what it does is expose them, right? It points out with all those historical parallels that this is what they've always been doing. It was always ideological. When you take to heart the brief span of U.S. history, you don't have 1,000 years like you do in virtually every other civilization that they're determined to erase. And, when Henry Kissinger kind of went into it, they came up with a German, they called it Realpolitik. You know, and that was brilliant that he and then when Russians have done it time after time, they would say, well, what am I going to get from it? What are you going to do for us? It's like, oh, that's cynical. No, it isn't. That's how civilization works for 1,000 years. You have and the Chinese, like, why? And the idea that you would expect something else, that people would react viscerally with ideological impunity or blinders on, is like childlike in its absolute dismissal of even, it's not reading history, it's the absolute notion of what history represents, you know? And I don't know how. I mean, I do agree that it's as bad now as it's ever been. I call it exposure rather than changing. I think that one of the things that it does, and you can hear this from the military people who talk about it all the time, is that you don't have people who know what the hell they're talking about. They're not talking about military, the art of war. They don't know anything about a combined arms operation. They don't seem to know anything about anything. So what they're doing then is whitewashing ideology to give it some historical or military veneer by slapping a few medals on it. Maybe a Purple Heart. Because if you were wounded by a, I don't know, roadside bomb in Afghanistan or Iraq, whatever, you must be an expert. You must really know. Why? Why, you know, why would you know? And it seems that those are the people who are moving up and now taking over the things that used to be black ops or psyops, rather CIA, are now openly. Look at the difference between the School of the Americas in Georgia in the 1960s and 70s and Vicki Newland, a State Department employee out on the Maidan handing out cookies, right? That's making ideology. You can use ideology under wraps to kind of manipulate the system as best you can. But these things have merged since all that time. There don't have to be a death squads that you could distance yourself from in Central America. You just go in and blow up everything. And it makes it easy. It's how you say, oh, this is just another one. Take Elliot Abrams, who is, he was my nemesis when I was in Nicaragua in 1990 and was writing and fighting for support of the Sandinista revolution, all this stuff. And he was this kind of third tier flunky, but he was obviously an out and out, like imperialist, like an absolute demon, like just was convinced his ideology was just would bleed, you know, or sweat through his suit. And I came involved in other things. I, you know, just hadn't, and I saw him pop up in something about Guaido. It was in the congressional hearings. This is 30 years later. Juan Guaido pops up as the puppet, the newest puppet, and him talking. And I saw him, his head is almost shaved. He has a big crooked nose, and he just looks like the personification of CIA, like vampire. And I just thought, oh my God, I thought he was dead. I just assumed he was dead. It was a long time ago. I mean, how can you keep that up, Nima, for that long? You know, 30 years, you're still spouting. Oh my God, he really is spouting it. And now he's risen to his deputy or whatever. And he's surrounded by all these people who've been walking the halls and basement halls of those institutions and are now running the show. And so that's saying it's become more ideological, is that those systems have allowed themselves to be crusted over this whole period of time. And that's how you really settle in. You know, the Democrats and Republicans can argue about abortion is just another one, it's on a different topic. But what really happened to Roe v. Wade was in 30 or 40 years, getting into those medicals, all the medical schools, and making abortion a choice to study. It wasn't regular, it wasn't normal part. So no one is trained. And by the end, more than 90% of counties in the country had no access, no legal abortion available at all. That wasn't political. That happened through the deliberate encroachment of the system and was not fought. And this is the same thing happening right now. Excuse the diversion, but that those how those things work is very important to see. Barnacles. You see them growing. You see that. Oh my God! Now it's the Secretary of State saying that. You know, and now it's good that Dick Cheney comes out and puts his word in for your gal running for president. Like how far can it go? We'll see.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Great Thank pleasure, you. As always.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you. Okay. Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.